I'm Karen Given, and it's time for three stories you should know.
Call God. In the time of crisis, all I ask is love.
That's newly signed Patriots wide receiver Antonio Brown in an Instagram live post from Thursday night, just 2 days after he was accused of rape in a federal lawsuit.
The devil gonna try to bring you down when you get closer to your goals.
And that's where we'll start this week. I'm joined by Bleacher Report's Miran Fader and by 538's Chris Herring. Welcome back to both of you.
Hey, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm going to start by talking about Antonio Brown, and believe me, I'd rather not. I'd rather not be put in the position to talk about another NFL athlete who's accused of doing something awful to a woman. This week, Antonio Brown was accused of assaulting his former personal trainer in a civil lawsuit. His lawyers immediately claimed that the relationship was consensual. And I really don't know who's telling the truth, but I have read the text messages allegedly sent by Brown to the woman he claims he was in a consensual relationship with. And they're vile. And I feel like we're in a loop here. Antonio Brown says he didn't rape her, but there are the text messages. Tyreek Hill says he didn't physically harm the mother of his child, but he was caught on tape threatening her. And there are other examples. It's clear to me that there's a culture inside the NFL that tells these men that it's okay to treat women in degrading and misogynistic ways. And so I'm wondering, what can the NFL do to change that culture? Miran?
I mean, first of all, if you know, looking at the text messages, agree with you 100%, horrible. And if these allegations are true, absolutely horrible. But I think in order to change anything, you have to acknowledge that there's a problem.
Yeah.
And that's the NFL's first misstep. They don't acknowledge that this is systemic. This isn't an isolated case over here, isolated case over there. This has been going on for so long, and nothing's really changing. I also wish that, you know, the culture could change in the sense of social media amplifying these things. All I saw on Twitter was, why did she come out at this point? And, you know, the timing is suspect. I really wish people would inform themselves about sexual assault victims and how trauma can affect when you report, how you report, if you report at all.
The NFL takes a very measured approach, which I think you have to do with these things. But generally speaking, from where I sit, and as someone who hasn't watched the NFL in several years because of the issues I take with it, I think that it's very much we aren't going to punish anything until we actually see it. And by see it, I mean like Ray Rice, where there's actually video evidence of it, which is concerning because there's all sorts of stuff that happens that isn't seen. I think that's what a lot of people take issue with.
Yeah. So I've interviewed Brenda Tracy. She's a gang rape survivor who talks to athletes, mostly men, about putting an end to sexual assault. And she talks about the need for men to be allies in this fight. But when Tom Brady was asked about Antonio Brown on Wednesday, he said, quote, things that don't involve me don't involve me. And I like Tom Brady. I think he's a good man, and I can't help but wonder how different the world would be if he had instead said, I don't know if Brown raped his former trainer, but I do know that I never want my daughter to receive text messages like the ones he allegedly sent. Miran, you're up.
Yeah, this week I wrote a story for Bleacher Report's BR Mag on women's soccer and brain trauma. I went to Boston to visit Dr. Anne McKee, who, you know, her research has been integral to our understanding of CTE. So in the brain bank, only 5% of the brains are women's brains. But we know that women suffer repetitive hits, too. Girls, in fact, are just as likely to suffer concussions than boys football players and three times as likely to suffer them as soccer players. Women are now just getting to the ages of, you know, 40, 45, 50, where they might see the effects of these hits. And so what do you tell the younger generation who are playing more than ever, but we actually have no idea what's happening to their brains every time there's a collision, there's a header, there's an impact?
Obviously, you want more studies and more research to be done on women. But one of the challenging things with CTE is that the most critical research is stuff that you can't get until people die. It's not research that's going to come quickly. You have to convince people to even be willing to give themselves to science once they do actually pass away. As we talk about the pay gap disparity, I think you might have an even wider chasm for just the health and the research disparity for a sport that, you know, a lot of people would not have thought of as being nearly as physical or as violent, if you really want to call it that.
It is amazing to me how many people are still surprised when we say women get more concussions than men. I tried to look up the first time I reported on it, and it's so long ago, like I can't find it in my archives, you know? But not all sports fans get their sports news from NPR. But here's the main question I had from reading your reporting, Miren. Dr. McKee has her own lab. Why doesn't she tackle this research?
I think it's extraordinarily difficult for a lot of the reasons that Chris was outlining, is that in order to study it, you have to receive brains. And the brain donation for her on women is just, it's such a struggle. Mm-hmm. It's hard too, because McKee, her science is not even very much believed by people when she's talking about men, about mm-hmm. football. And so it's hard enough to push that uphill. I think the hardest part too is when you were talking about, you know, people were surprised. I think it's upsetting to learn about this. I think it's upsetting to think that, oh, okay, my girl can play soccer and this could hurt her later in life. We know that sports are so good for women's self-esteem and confidence. And it's very hard to kind of come to terms with, like, maybe this isn't the best thing.
Yeah, and I wonder how much for the athletes themselves, because I know I am very sensitive to being told, like, as a woman, you should not do whatever, you know? Like, yes. It has a different context when it's placed in gender.
It does, and it's hard because this was such a great year for women. When, you know, we were watching the Women's World Cup, it was incredible, it was inspiring, and it's hard, but we have to remember that Megan Rapinoe, Abby Wambach, Michelle Akers, Brianna Scurry, these women pledged their brains. They're saying, study us. And although they didn't talk for my story, this is something they very much care about.
Yeah. All right, Chris, you're up.
So I came across a story looking at women's football in Utah. A woman named Kelsey McKinney wrote a story for Deadspin about the only all-girls football, tackle football, for basically, I think, 4th grade to 12th grade, and the challenges that they face in trying to not really get it off the ground, because in her reporting she found that it's basically exploded in terms of participation by about 900%, but basically trying to get it to being something that is kind of recognized through different high schools and making it a Title IX argument, which generally is something talked about at the college level as opposed to the high school level. So I found the story to be interesting. You absolutely have injury concerns, but also that in a way, playing in a league with other girls might keep them safer.
I remember being in elementary school and wanting to join the basketball team, and there was no girls' basketball team.
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
So, like, what was I going to do? So I definitely joined the boys' team, and that's when I learned what Title IX was in fifth grade. And obviously, you don't really understand it. You just want to play. Yes, there are injuries, and both of these things are true. We shouldn't, like, not provide opportunity because perhaps there could be injuries. At least there should be opportunity. And at the very core of this story, you could kind of see how much it meant to these girls, and I think that's very important.
Football's a dangerous game. It is. And I'm supportive of finding all of the ways that can make it safer. And this league in Utah is exploring some of those. But there's no sport that has a bigger place in American culture than football does, especially at the high school level. And I just don't think we should be telling our girls that they can be prom queen, but they can't be captain of the football team.
I was really taken by one particular anecdote here about a girl who had gotten her hair done, and that she could embrace that, and that her teammates were running up to her kind of giving her compliments on her hair. You should be able to have that. And it's funny, you know, the way that you all wanted to be involved. In my case, I wanted to play football as a kid, and my mom would not let me. And I'm grateful for it now, because I think there are all sorts of health concerns, as we talked about. But at the same time, I would not want there to be something in place that just bars me from being able to play. And as a guy, I can't even really relate to that.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Bleacher Report's Miren Fader and 538's Chris Herring. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me again.